But I've realized pretty quickly that when you look at the Marine Corps, when you look at college sports teams, when you look at major corporations and other organizations, like, they recruit all the time, consistently. And we don't do that because we typically don't have the capacity, we don't have the training, we don't have the interest and knowledge to do those things. And we either need to find ways to outsource it, or we need to start to do a little bit of that consistently, or we're gonna keep getting our butts kicked in this labor market. You take nothing else from me with recruiting, is it has to be consistent, it has to be every day, it has to be forever. And if you can do that, you will make millions of dollars more over the course of your career, because you're going to have a stronger team, your capacity is going to be right, the right people will be in the right seats.
Welcome to the Insurance Stream. I'm your host, Abe Bowling, talking today to Alex Shattuck. He is an author, a professional recruiter, and one of the insurance industry greats. Has lots of advice to offer those of us who are struggling to find good agents, or agents, period. The most challenging labor market that's been around in a really, really, really long time. And, you know, I think as agency owners, the thing that we do is adjust, right? We adjust the sales when the storm comes. So he's going to give us his advice today on how to find the right talent, how to screen through the folks that we get who apply for the openings, and how to recruit. He is truly one of the industry experts when it comes to this stuff. So we're really excited to dive in and find out his perspective on what insurance agency owners should be doing to find the right talent in this challenging market. So we will dive right into our interview with Alex Shattuck right after this. Hey everybody, Abe Bowling here from the Insurance Dream Podcast. Excited to remind you that Insurance Professionals is giving away a stay at Yosemite RV Resort in a yurt 4th of July weekend to one hardworking agent for policies written during the month of April. Insurance Professionals was founded by former agency owners, so they know how to make life easy on agents who work with them. Between the access to nationally known carriers, their free multi-rater, the libraries of on-demand and live trainings available, and the wealth of information they provide agents on their proprietary dashboards, adding Insurance Professionals to your list of market access providers is an easy business decision. They charge no upfront fees, no monthly fees, and you own your book of business with them 100% from day one. Getting started with Insurance Professionals is easy. Just go to becomeaninsurancepro.com to get started. The winner of the 4th of July Yosemite Getaway Giveaway will appear on an episode of the Insurance Dream Podcast, giving you exposure to our nationwide audience. That website to get started again is becomeaninsurancepro.com. Okay, I'm here with Alex Shattuck. Alex is the author of the book Complacency Kills: Decrease Hours and Increase Profits by Applying a Marine's Lesson from War to Your Business. You are also the head of Aspirational Recruiting, and you are an insurance agent. And I understand you got a couple other businesses as well, right?
Yeah, some real estate stuff as well. So I'm a busy guy between the writing, the speaking, the coaching, and recruiting and insurance and all that fun stuff. It's been a wild ride, but I enjoy it.
Well, I am anxious to hear your story today. I've heard you on other broadcast mediums. I've read the introduction to your book. I have, basically what I understand is that the only way for you to do the volume of things that you do is through being the team leader, being the business owner, and not like necessarily as much the business operator. But, you know, one of the major challenges facing all agents, all businesses today, but especially insurance agents in growth and scalability, is the ability to find staff. So let's first go into your book real quick. Complacency Kills. You can pick it up on Amazon. Mm-hmm. Very, very reasonable price. What did I see? It was, you can get it on Kindle Unlimited. Just download it and read it. Or, you know, can people buy I'm a paperback guy. I don't really like Kindle.
Yeah, I can get you my website where they can get a paperback copy if they choose to go that route. It's alexshattuck.com/book.
That's easy. S-H-A-T-T-U-C-K is how you spell Shattuck. So Alex, thank you for joining me today. You got a million things going on, and you took time to come and speak with us. So we appreciate that. But walk me through Complacency Kills. Give me that little, 30,000 foot view of the background, and then, how you ended up applying this to your business life.
Sure. Yeah. To give you that view, I got to take you back a few years now, actually 15 years or better. This is 2006. And into 2007, when I was serving the Marine Corps, I was in the infantry battalion, and we deployed to Fallujah, Iraq. way back when. And, you know, if you remember that war and that city in particular, that was one of those locations where if you had a loved one in the military, that was probably one of those spots that you didn't want to see him or her end up in. But that's where I was, Fallujah, Iraq. And so, you know, it was one of those worlds where much different than what we're experiencing here today. Thank God. And it was a situation where we live within the city, you couldn't even go outside of the building that we occupied to use the port-a-john without having a full flak jacket on, weapon on you, magazine inserted and around in the chamber just to use the bathroom. And then once you stepped outside the wire on patrol, you know, whether it be on foot or in a vehicle, everything was a threat. You know, we had to look out for IEDs, so roadside bombs, snipers, other small arms fire. Kids were known to throw grenades, RPGs, and also we would deal with fairly accurate mortar fire at times. And so the threat was always constant and real, and there was never really a great opportunity for us to just breathe. You know, you're just always kind of on edge. But there were often times where we would be given the opportunity to take a convoy outside of the city, which was nice, because once we got outside of the city, we would go to a much larger base to get resupplied. That was usually what we were there to do. And what we would do is we would cross over to these big walls with armed guards to get resupplied. And they also had working phones and internet so we could make contact home, usually for the first time in a while. We would also have a chow hall so we could eat some good food. And we thoroughly enjoyed that. We could take off our flak jackets, unload our weapon, take off our Kevlar helmet, and just relax for a few minutes. But it was always fairly short-lived. You know, once we did what we came there to do, they would have us gear back up, load up, and we would start making the trip to the exit. And once we got to the exit, there was this image, and this is where the complacency kills theme comes from, right? There's this image of a skull, and you can see the image behind me. It's a very comparable image, and it was a skull, crossbones, and the word said complacency kills. And this wasn't unique to this base outside of Fallujah. It was kind of a theme throughout Iraq and beyond, I'm sure. But that was something that stuck with me. It was that final reminder for us that once you exit these walls, it's game on, right? You got to have your A game on. And if you don't, that can be devastating for you or even worse for those around you. So that was a short-lived experience, and we're back out into it. And that image and skull is something that I just never forgot, you know. And we got home and all that fun stuff, and you know, that was great. I got to meet my daughter for the first time that was born when I was overseas, and that was a pretty cool experience. And then, you know, time went by, and you know, over the course of those years after coming home, I started to realize that I was getting complacent in a handful of different areas within my own life, and I realized I wasn't leveraging any of my experiences overseas to better myself here at home. And if anything, they might have been counterproductive in some cases. And so that image and the words kept creeping back into my mind. And so I decided to apply that as a mindset here at home. So that brutal lesson from overseas, I applied here at home in my business. And what I found in the years following is that complacency doesn't just kill in a war zone. Complacency kills here at home too. It'll kill our finances, it'll kill our health, our relationships, and complacency will absolutely kill our businesses. And that's what the book is really about. It does talk about how it applies to life and some of those things too. But more importantly, if you're a small business owner, obviously insurance agent, most everything in this book is applicable to you and your business. And so that's how that came to be. And that's what the message is within that book.
Sure. And, you know, one of the reasons that I wanted to have you on, I think the value that you're going to bring our agents here at the Insurance Stream podcast is you certainly brought value to me. I listened to the podcast that I heard you on, and I texted my wife and I said, you got to listen to this. The message that you were sending about continuously recruiting, always be recruiting, it really stuck with me, because I'm one of those people where I do not post a job ad because I hate it, man. I hate the whole process of everything about posting a job ad. But after listening to your podcast, I'm thinking maybe it's not that I hate. Maybe it's when I do it, when I initiate the job posting, those are the things that are making me hate this process. Because I mean, we've done everything, right? Like we had a retail agency for about a decade. And then we were acquired by a national firm. But you know, throughout the time that we owned the place, the only time I ever interviewed people was when I had an open position. And you compared it to going to the grocery store hungry, right? You're like, and I heard one of the people that I heard is, you know, would I want to be stuck in an airport with this person, you know, for the next 6 hours on a layover, you know? And so I applied that a little bit when I was hiring, and that was terrible too, because I'm like really pretty like laid back guy. And so I'm like, I could probably sit there and strike up a conversation with just about anybody on the planet, right? So I'm like, oh yeah, it wouldn't be bad to be stuck in an airport with this person. But it's much different than that, right? Now I've got kids that are, you know, I've got an adult daughter, I've got a daughter that's almost an adult. And so one of the things that I saw recently that maybe would be a little bit more applicable would be, would you want your kid working for this person? And I think that's a good rule of thumb. But tell me about your process, because that's your main job. I mean, you're running insurance, you're running real estate. You know, you've got the aspirational recruiting. Your main job is finding talent now. Is that accurate?
Yeah. I mean, that's, I think, the differentiator between my agencies and many others across Michigan and even across the country. You know, we've done some pretty cool things. We've had a lot of success, but I've always attributed my success, our success, to my team, of course, but ultimately it was the recruiting efforts that led to that consistent team. And to me, you already mentioned it, man. It's like, if you only recruit when you have to, when you have a butt you need to put in a chair, when you only do it that way, it's like going to the grocery store hungry. You make bad decisions and it gets extremely expensive. Yeah. And I just never took that approach. I don't know if it was the military thing or the sports background combination of stuff, but I've realized pretty quickly that when you look at the Marine Corps, when you look at college sports teams, when you look at major corporations and other organizations, like, they recruit all the time, consistently.
Yeah.
And we don't do that because we typically don't have the capacity, we don't have the training, we don't have the interest and knowledge to do those things. And we either need to find ways to outsource it, or we need to start to do a little bit of that consistently, or we're gonna keep getting our butts kicked in this labor market. Yeah. So we have to do better. The good news is it doesn't have to be a crazy amount of things every single day. You don't need to take on a third or fourth job to do this. A little bit goes a long way. And I talk about working out. You know, it's like, if you work out 10 to 15 minutes a day, you're going to be okay, right? Like, just if you do that year round, 10 to 15 minutes, you get after it, you're going to be all right. But if you think you're going to start working out 3 weeks before spring break to get you ready for Instagram, it ain't going to be pretty. You know what I'm saying? Like, you have to be consistent in those activities that drive results with fitness. And the same thing goes with recruiting. And so that the one thing, if you take nothing else from me with recruiting, is it has to be consistent. It has to be every day. It has to be forever. And if you can do that, you will make millions of dollars more over the course of your career, because you're going to have a stronger team. Your capacity is going to be right. The right people will be in the right seats. You can also be in a position of strength, so you can coach your team and hold them accountable for the first time in a long time, because you're not worried about Nancy leaving you. So to me, it's consistency is the first thing. And then from there, we can dive as deep as you want as far as some of the things you can do every day.
Well, so walk me through. Say, let's just say that I'm a business owner that doesn't hire like I'm supposed to, or I don't actively recruit like I'm supposed to. What is the very first thing that I should do?
I think the very first thing you should do is invest into an applicant tracking system. And, you know, depending on the carrier, you know, your company might have certain ones that might be subsidized, or they might recommend, or whatever. Maybe it's pre-built out for you. So maybe check with whoever you're representing first, then just go to Google, find an applicant tracking system for recruiting. One that's going to allow you to track the people through the different stages and phases of recruiting. But also, more importantly, when you post a job, it blasts that job out to the major job board. So like Indeed, ZipRecruiter, all those. Make sure it's going out to all those major job boards, so people are funneling through into the applicant tracking system from those major job boards. When you do that, though, I think some of the biggest mistakes I see with an applicant tracking systems is, as insurance agents, we try to make it sexier than it is. You know what I'm saying? We get real creative with the titles. I tell you what, people don't apply for things they don't understand. The data backs that up. They don't apply for jobs that they don't understand. They don't apply for jobs they don't think they can actually get. And I was one of those people. You know, if you look at my background, you know, my Marine Corps infantry background, my degree, when I got recruited to work for a local insurance agent, my degree that wasn't even done yet, it was criminal justice. It still is. I finished it. But like at the time, it was not done. It was not business. It was not insurance. I had zero professional background. And I told the agent that. I said, look, I'm flattered, but I'm not qualified. And he said, you don't need all that. You just got to get licensed. And I'm like, okay. And so I took a chance because this is 2009 when everybody was getting laid off in the law enforcement world. And so I took a chance on something. He took a chance on me. And so what I tell agents is be willing to take a chance on somebody. Cast a very wide net. Use words that are really basic and easy and fundamental to what most people can qualify for. Get the whole world to apply to your job posting and then work to kiss all the frogs and screen them out and get to those onesies and twosies that can handle doing what we need them to do. But it doesn't have to be someone that's got insurance background, a professional background, that cocktail waitress, that infantry marine, whatever, right? Like they can sell and service some insurance.
What is your job posting that you recommend for insurance agents say? Does it say insurance agent for hire?
I mean, well, you know what? I would do something simple within that office. So I find if you put like insurance and financial representative, you're not going to get too many people like me applying.
Right.
Or too many people outside of the professional folks. And typically those folks might not apply for you either, depending on what kind of benefits and pay that you're promoting. But if you were to post, say, customer service representative or office representative or receptionist or account representative, just some basic terms that most people can say, maybe I can get my foot in the door with this insurance company with that job posting. Like you're going to get way more people in front of you. And then you just got to be able to have a conversation around what the opportunities are within your office and what that entails and where it could go. And then you still have to be able to sell the opportunity and land that talent once they get in front of you, which is kind of a whole other topic. But so yeah, I would keep it really simple. I mean, if the posting is from X insurance company, they'll know it entails insurance. I don't think you have to use the word insurance right in the job posting.
Yeah, I think the jobs that we've put out over the years, the lowest response rate that we got was when we posted a job for an insurance agent, for sure, by a long shot. So we've gone and we've set up an applicant tracking system. We have posted a job that doesn't say insurance agent. And now we've got candidates flowing in. What are some of the tools and tricks that you use to make sure that, so, you know, I hired somebody once that I thought was fantastic. And the second day she was there, she was staring at her cell phone and she wasn't even young either. I mean, she was, you know, she wasn't old, but she's like a middle-aged person. She was staring at her cell phone while she was going down the concrete stairs outside of our office, stepped on her ankle with her entire body weight, broke her ankle, came in, said, I'm not going to tell anybody about this. I said, no, that's not really a possibility. You got to tell, you know, whoever you need to about this. So she went, and then she tried to apply for retraining when she had been there for 3 days. And I'm like, I didn't even have her trained yet. Like, why are we paying for retraining? And I've got a million stories like that. And then we used a recruiting agency and they were like, we'll send you the most qualified people. It'll be great. You'll love them. One day I got a flagger that came in and she had never worked in a professional office in her life. Her history was construction and she was a flagger. And I mean, and so there's a whole bunch of things like that. So those are the experiences that it's like, I don't even want to do this. I don't even want to step into this arena or play this game at all until I absolutely have to, which you're right, is when you make the most terrible decisions, probably how I led to those people in the first place. But we had some really good people too. And you know, after listening to your podcast, the best hire we ever made, we hired this individual when we didn't need somebody. He came in and we had already actually hired two people. The position was open for one. We had hired two people because there was two applicants that did really well. And then this third person came in and my wife was doing the interviews and just knocked her socks off. He was incredible. And she was like, either this guy's competition that's totally looking to take us down, or he's going to be the best hire we ever made. And he was the best hire we ever made. So that worked out really well. Mm-hmm. But the point is that we were already, you know, that was the second hire past the hire that we were looking to make. And 5 years later, he was the only person that was still with us out of that group of hires. So when you said that, I was like, wow, there's something there. So like I said, let's, you know, getting all of my venting out on our terrible hires, what do we do now that to make sure that we're hiring the good ones and not trying to minimize, at least, I mean, everybody's going to make mistakes, right? But trying to minimize those mistakes, walk us through those steps.
Yeah. So I think one of the best ways to avoid a bad hire is being consistent enough to know you don't have to take a chance on somebody if you don't want to take a chance on somebody. If you have the scarcity mindset when it comes to labor market, you're going to be like, well, dude's good enough. right? And that typically doesn't work out. And so again, knowing that you have a system and process behind what you're doing, you know, if you pass on somebody, you got someone else coming along next week and it's all good. So that's the first thing. I think the second thing is leverage different assessments that can tell you some things about these people. Some applicant tracking systems have those built in. You can pay for others. But even then, I also know that some agents will use certain assessments as a crutch to not hire. And even though there's an opportunity cost with having average people in the seat, there's also an opportunity cost without having certain people in seats at all. And so you got to be careful that you're not staffed at all because you just assess everybody to death. I think I've identified two things outside of the assessments that are out there that can really help you make good decisions when it comes to interviewing. And it has to be both. And I'll explain why in a second. The first one is they have to be hungry. And that's a pretty broad term. What I'm saying when I say hungry, it could be they're super competitive, maybe a former college athlete. Maybe they have aspirations to open their own agency one day and be in your seat. Maybe they have a chip on their shoulder for whatever reason. They want to prove some people wrong. Maybe it's a single mom or single dad that has some mouths to feed that needs to get after it, that wants to get after it. It's going to be super appreciative of the opportunity. But there's something internal that's driving them when no one else is looking. They're still working hard. It's 5:01 and they're still making some calls and they're not caring if somebody's watching or not. That's one thing, but that's not the only thing. Because I was looking at all the different assessments and the failed hires and the good hires of my past. And I had one gentleman that played professional sports and he was terrible at selling insurance. I'm like, well, he was competitive. You can't tell me he wasn't competitive. He played professional sports. But the one thing he was missing, which is super easy to figure out during the interview, is he had zero personality. You know, he was not one that you'd want to have a beer with over the weekend or talk to outside of business hours or whatever, like zero personality. I was putting too much emphasis on the fact that he played professional sports and he was going to get after it and be a winner and whatever. No one wanted to talk to him. I didn't even want to talk to him, right? And so I would take someone that's super energetic and bubbly and likable over a great assessment score or a degree in this or a degree in that. Like, give me someone that when I get them on the phone, I want to stay on the phone with them, because if I want to stay on the phone with them, my customers and prospects want to stay on the phone with them. They want to be friends with them. If they want to be friends with them, they want to buy insurance for them when they're offered insurance. So to me, you got to have that inner drive. You got to be hungry and you got to be super likable. If you're missing any one of those two things, I don't care what the assessments or resumes say. So those are a couple ways to avoid bad hires. And then also, like, be proactive. Right? Play offense all the time. For example, this happened this morning. I was with my son. We went to breakfast this morning and I'm sitting there there's a little, like, a bar thing. So there's no tables available. And all of a sudden the owner walks out and this kid, and I say kid, he's probably low 20s, wearing Michigan State gear. They're interviewing and they're just four or five, you know, stools over or whatever. And this kid's crushing it. I'm like, huh, I bet he could sell some insurance. And so I'm just listening and watching. And then I hear her say, like, hey, what's your phone number? I get at my phone, 517-977-5. I want to say the last two because I don't want anybody blowing them up. But I wrote it down.
You don't want to lose your best producer, phone. Right?
Right. So I pretend I got to use the restroom. So I start sneaking over and I peek over her shoulder to verify the number that she wrote down was the number I thought I heard, because I don't have great hearing. And then I came back through. When he walked out, I shot him a text message. I'm like, hey, are you the MSU guy I just saw at this place? He hasn't responded yet. But, like, that's the stuff you got to do. You got to look for opportunities.
Was that to today? Say, you
know what? That dude can sell insurance.
Yeah. Was that today?
That was this morning.
That's so crazy.
This morning. Yeah.
So you're literally always recruiting. That's impressive.
I'm always recruiting. You know, think about this. If I were to say, hey, Billy, I want to quote your insurance today. Like, I might sell a household, right? I'm an introvert. This isn't even natural for me, but let's say if I went up to him, I'm like, hey, let me quote your insurance. Maybe I get a household out of it. Right. But if I hire somebody that's an all-star, how many insurance sales are we going to have from that hire? To me, the recruiting piece is the best sale we can ever make. And that's why I enjoy doing it.
Absolutely. You know, and everything you said about the friendly, the energetic, the bubbly, you described very perfectly the best hire that we ever made. And by we, I mean my wife. But, you know, when you're totally right, the only employee that for the whole 10 years that we owned the business, the only employee that I stayed after, we would stay after standing outside in front of the insurance agency, sometimes talk until 8 o'clock at night. And that's the only person we ever did that with. So That's an interesting piece of the puzzle. So finding those traits in your applicants is obviously super, super key. For me, we never had a problem retaining people, but I think I'm reading more and more about time off and flexible schedules, or, you know, those are like kind of the up and coming things that, or maybe not even up and coming, maybe they're current, that employees are looking for. Has that been your experience?
Yeah. And it's not just Gen Z, you know, it's not just the young folks. I think everybody appreciates that. And it's also a space where we can win. You know, if you think about it, like Billy Bob's insurance company, like, is only going to be able to compete with that corporation or university or government job for so long when it comes to benefits and pay. We just can't keep paying more and more and more. So we got to start to get creative with what we can offer. And to me, like, having a little bit of grace within someone's schedule goes a long way. And so I have some folks in my team, some moms in particular, that do need a little bit more grace when it comes to flexibility. But you know what? Like, every time I give that in exchange, they sell more insurance. It's just like the trend goes in that direction. When I give, they give. It's a good mutual relationship. I would rather have somebody for 7 hours that busts their butt for 7 hours hard than someone that's sitting there for 8 hours that's going to be average for 8 hours. So I'm with you. I think we have to be able and be willing to go there with people. And then when it comes to compensation and benefits and those things too, when it comes to getting creative with folks, one thing I found too is sometimes people forget how we get paid. You know, I think even the best team members don't always fully grasp. And this is something that it's been eye-opening for me in recent weeks and months. But like, if you don't offer a high base, that's fine, right? Commissions, bonus, they should be able to make this if they sell that, whatever. But like, you have to be able to articulate that in a very simple way during the interview to land them, but also consistently throughout during the onboarding and even beyond to retain them. Because when all of a sudden they see someone come through with 50 grand in benefits and whatever, and you don't offer that as a guarantee, they might jump ship, even if they're making 55 working for you, because they might not even know they're making 55, right? And so we have to consistently revisit what we are doing on their behalf. And that's something I'm just starting to get even more in tune with at where I'm at with my agencies.
Sure. Do you find that do you guys offer a lot of paid time off, a lot of flexibility? And if you do you advertise that in the job posting?
You bet. I think if you're going to use an applicant tracking system that's going to show up on Indeed and all those others, you got to put in everything and anything that's going to make you show up in those searches. Because you have to understand, when someone goes to look for a job, like, they're just like when you go to Google something or search for something, you're going to put in what you want. Right. And so they're going to put in like health benefits and all these things, and put in everything that you offer. And so when they're searching out certain things, you're showing up. Mm. Right. And a big one right now is remote. Yeah. Right. Be having virtual opportunities. And I know not everybody is good with that, but like, a lot of people are searching for that. So if you do offer some type of remote options, even if it's like partially remote, I'd still leverage that word. So you're showing up for everybody that's searching. Because the thing is too, like, just because they use that word when they search doesn't mean they won't work in your office. That's just their preference. But if you're not able to leverage that word at all, you're not showing up in those searches. So that's one thing to keep in mind as well.
Absolutely. So do you find, and maybe there's just a whole bunch of dirt for every diamond anyway, do you find that advertising flexible schedule, paid time off, remote possibility, do you find it attracts those people that are lazy, that don't really want to work hard, that, you know, I mean, is that a magnet for it, or is that a myth?
I'll ask a question to answer your question. Do you like paid time off? Do you like flexibility? Do you like benefits?
I do.
Are you lazy?
No.
Okay. There's my answer. You know, I think those are just things that most people enjoy and appreciate, right? And so to me, that doesn't scream laziness. You know, to me, it just shares what you're willing to do.
I'm just saying, like, you know, when you're looking at drawing people in, do you think that highly promoting the flexibility, highly promoting paid time off? Because I mean, so like our company, right? We offer so you're with us for 6 months, you get 2 weeks off, right? You're with us for a year, you get another 2 weeks off. So, but you know, there's dialogue that happens where you're going, when you advertise in 6 months, you get 2 weeks. And then in a year, you get another 2 weeks, and you're over a month of paid time off after your first year. that basically you're bringing in more more things to sift through, and you're having a harder time. You know what I mean? So do you, what do you think? So from your experience, is that something? I mean, you're saying yes, we should advertise that, advertise every single thing in your arsenal, and then, you know, because I guess the debate is would the people that are hardworking and motivated and career driven and stuff like that, would they apply for the job anyway if that hadn't been this highly emphasized in those ads?
It's a great question. I think we're mine. I don't have data to back up this statement, but I think
experience, though, you got a lot of experience.
Yes, sure. And so from my experience and just me personally, if I was, and even though I'm hardworking and I could point to certain things to justify me saying that, if I were looking at two different job opportunities, right, agent A and agent B, and this guy offered these things and this guy didn't, even though I'm not even passionate about all the other stuff, I think the default is still apply to the other agent that offered those things, because it's not a, I mean, I'm not going to be turned off by having flexibility, right? So I think it's just one more way of casting a wide net. And I think that's where it's important to make sure you're screening a way where you are getting those folks out that might be looking at the opportunity as maybe an easy opportunity, and they're not going to work hard. But the reality is, what the data does tell us about Gen Z, which is now 25, 26 years old, is they care about that stuff. They care about having those, the flexible hours. They care about retirement. They care about, because you got to think, if you're 25, 26 years old, they saw us, and maybe folks even a little bit older than myself, what we went through back in 2008 and 2009. Right. They saw the student loan issues. They saw the Great Recession. They saw how that impacted their parents. And now they're coming of age and working, and they don't want to make those same mistakes. Right. So if you offer to pay, offset some student loans, or give them some 401k options, like, they're more in tune with saving for retirement than we were when we came through. I'm 36 years old, and you look like you're in the same range, maybe. But and so that generation, which, again, they're not kids anymore, they care more. And so if we're going to actually attract these people, we have to be willing and able to share all of that stuff. And we'll get a few along the way that maybe don't check the box we want to check. That's just why we got to take our time to do our due diligence throughout the process to weed those folks out.
Yeah. So wider net, better screen.
Correct.
Cool. How many employees do you have total amongst all your companies?
Oh, geez. With my insurance company, probably between 17, 18. Our recruiting company, probably around 25.
Okay.
And, you know, real estate, it's pretty small stuff. And so maybe one additional to help me with that. So you're probably looking at 40 to 50
employees. How many interviews do you do per week?
You know what? That changed. Before, you know, I have two insurance agencies, and one was probably plus one in staff. One was just where I wanted it, with a great sales team. So I was being super selective, right? If I'm really good or plus one, I want to protect my time and my team's time. Oftentimes I'll have my team interview before I do it to save me some time. But that changed. I got a 2-week notice from one of my top producers opening an agency with a competitor. And so now my tune has changed. And so now it's like, okay, let's get in front of some people aggressively. And we're playing offense. We're getting out in the community. We're going to go steal some people. And so my team does the initial in-office interview after we put them through our process, including the phone screen. And so if they give them the thumbs up, then it comes to me. But my team right now is probably interviewing almost daily.
Okay.
Because we're aggressively looking to hire. And every single day, I have two team members from each office going out to lunch or going out to some business to try to recruit somebody away. And then I'm reimbursing them for the money they spend during that time, because I understand that there's an opportunity cost if we don't replace this person with somebody good real quick. And so I'm spending some money to get some boots on the ground and to assist with my recruiting efforts. On the recruiting team, you know, I've been adding about 5 to 8 recruiters each month as the business has grown. And I do have now a VP of operations within that business that does 95% of the recruiting and hiring for me. So that's protected my time. So I'm not getting sucked into that as much as I once was as I started the business. And so personally, I've scaled the businesses in a way where I don't have to do it every day, but my teams are pretty much interviewing daily right now.
So, and when you say daily, is that like one a day, two a day, three a day, five?
Probably one a day at most. One a day. And again, if you would have rewound 2 weeks ago, we weren't interviewing aggressively like that. But now, sure. Since things have changed, our capacity is changing, we're hitting the ground hard, and we're interviewing as much as we possibly can, probably averaging no more than one a day.
Okay. And then, so let's go back to 3 weeks ago. Are you doing your staff, your organization as a whole, are you doing an interview a week at that point in time, just as kind of like your baseline?
Yeah, I think probably at most one a week, every other week, as we find people worth putting in front of the team. You know, when we're staffed really well, I don't really want to take chances with having someone come in and wasting my team's time. But if we're not staffed exactly the way I want it or better, then I don't mind making a mistake or two with people getting in front of my team. I believe you miss every shot you don't take. If you need a body, you need to start aggressively getting in front of some people. Just like life insurance sales, right? Like, if you run one life appointment this month, you might sell a life insurance policy. If you run 20, you're going to sell a couple things. But you know what? Out of those 20, some won't show up. Mm-hmm. Some will walk in smelling like weed and ineligible. Some will walk in with no money. Like, they're not all going to be great.
Right.
So the same thing goes with recruiting. It's a volume thing. It's a consistency thing. And it has to happen over time, just like insurance sales.
Absolutely. Well, your words of advice to agents that think that they can't find anybody right now. I mean, this whole episode's been advice, but if you
it's
one line,
I would say take some ownership over what percentage of that you're responsible for. Right. And so, like, it's not the millennials. I'm a millennial, right? It's not us. It's not the unemployment benefits anymore, right? It's not that. It's most likely you. It's most likely you and your inability to consistently recruit. Once you make the decision to do a little bit of something every single day, you'll start to get lucky and find some people. Right. And so, that's kind of harsh, but it's the truth, right? Like, if you really look at, like, man, how come I'm not in better shape? Well, what are you doing? Like, are you doing something that's going to move the needle in the right direction? And so the answer is typically no, not enough. And the same thing goes with recruiting. The same thing goes with selling insurance. Same thing goes with most everything in our life, right? Yep. Complacency kills.
Absolutely. Alex, thank you so very much. I appreciate you joining this. I think we've got a whole pile of gold that we just shoved into a whole bunch of agencies across the country. Again, you can pick up Alex's book on Amazon or out, probably better at alexshattuck.com. But Complacency Kills: Decrease Hours and Increase Profits by Applying a Marine's Lesson from War to Your Business. Thanks, Alex. I hope you'll come back.
I will. Thank you.